What does a powerful position do to the person who holds that power? Welcome to The Good Word. I am Mathilde Frey, Professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology. I'm your host and study guide author for this lesson about Joseph, Prince of Egypt. My conversation partners today are Jody Washburn, Professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology, and Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament from Walla Walla University in the School of Theology. Today we are going to discuss and learn about Joseph, who is in a leading, top, high position in Egypt. What does a powerful position do to the person who holds that power? What do you think?
Well, it has a great potential for corruption.
You know, we talk these days about how our brain patterns or habits have not had a chance yet to catch up with the tremendous jumps in technology. And you have a beautiful line here in the study guide where you say, Joseph in a single day moves from zero to hero, to the, you know, to the idea of going from being a prisoner.
Yes.
With very little, I mean, yes, he could have been a leader in the prison, but still it's very little agency, so to speak, in comparison to being a commander, right? And you think of the various ways that differences in resourcing, we have to adapt to that, right? We have to build new patterns and adapt. And so perhaps this is not as much just the powerful position, but the almost overnight change that we are really talking about here, right? What are the implications of very quick changes in power or position?
Yes. There is no learning, time for learning, time for adjusting and growing into it. He may have had some power in the house of Potiphar earlier, but that story doesn't end well for him. So.
And he was forgotten in prison, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So he becomes the major power player, especially in a time where Egypt, according to the story, goes through that very turbulent period, and he's supposed to manage that.
Do you think he does a good job with it?
Well, it looks like for the economy of Egypt, he did a good job, isn't it?
But there's some interesting elements that you brought into the study guide, that those things that he did for the economy for Egypt actually had some long-term negative impact.
Yep. Yes. And that's a pattern that, if we think about it, will play out over and over.
Yeah.
I mean, think of times of prosperity much later, even in the history of ancient Israel, where the prophets sort of confront the kings for being so interested in economic centralization and efficiency that they're taking they're exhausting the land and the people, both.
The land is taken away. The people sell themselves to the ruling power.
Yep. And this connection with provision of basic needs for each individual, extended family, and connection to land, again, is something that is going to be a thread running through. Because if you think of some of the more radical elements, for instance, of the Mosaic Law, when we get further in the Pentateuch, some of those elements are exactly a reversal of what we're told in Genesis. Joseph starts, where people are told, no, you keep enough land in each extended family that they can provide for their basic needs. And now, we see here this background maybe shed some light on why those elements would have been so important in the Mosaic covenant.
That's really interesting. For example, the law about the slaves who should not be slaves beyond 7 years, at least for the Hebrew slaves, mm-hmm. right? And then the land to return to the original owner in the sabbatical jubilee year.
Yeah.
So Joseph puts policies in place that he was not even asked to do, at least according to the text doesn't mention it, and also is interpreters pointed out that the Pharaoh did not ask him to do those like strong ways of providing here. First, the economy is good, but then there is going to be the famine. And he is the one in charge to make sure that during the good times there is plenty, and then he will manage starvation by getting the people, as making the people into slaves, and then even selling back to them the food that they have gathered.
Yeah.
This will be the very way how then after the death of Joseph, and we come into the time of Moses, where the Israelites are the ones who are experiencing that on their own bodies.
Yeah.
That kind of enslavement.
And how many times do we read these stories separately? We lose the narrative arc or the inner biblical dialogue, right? How one text is in conversation with another. I mean, I love one of these quotes that you have in the study guide from a book called The Beginning of Wisdom, where you quote Leon Cass saying, "Joseph is saving life by making Pharaoh rich and soon all powerful. While we may applaud Joseph's forethought, we are rightly made uneasy by this man who profits from exercising his godlike power over life and death." What a context for, you know, reading the continued story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He turns the people into slaves, and that is what will then be the fate of his own people to come. Well, this kind of idea and this kind of thinking of a concentrated power at the top is one that we are still living with. And it's hard to speak about it in a context where it is the very heart of a world where people on the bottom are so dependent on what comes down to them, and yet so little comes down from a place that gets to be larger, bigger, with more zeros behind those numbers all the time. And we learn that this is supposed to be the way how everybody has some kind of a, you know, benefit from it. And yet we see that is not the case.
Yeah.
Matilda, there's a question in your study guide that I would like for you to address, or maybe it's a comment. It says, considering his traumatic past, Joseph may well be feeling endangered by his brother's reappearance in his well-settled life in Egypt. Will they drag him back to the dark and painful experiences of his youth? Tell me what you were thinking there.
Well, the brothers come and he encounters them, and it looks like that between Joseph and the brothers, he is like in a dilemma how to reveal himself to them. I think he wants to, but he takes some precautions. And
he also wants to find out what's happened to them.
Right. Yeah. And what is going on at home and so on. So I think we read the story, and if we just read the words and not go a little bit beyond and into the background of it, I think the story of Joseph is told with all those human human ways of dealing with a family situation that is so difficult. And so to recognize that there is more to it and there may be ways how Joseph would go about that, that is why I felt that he might have, you know, thought about how do I do this? What happens if and when I show myself to them? How will they accept or not accept that? What would be the consequences for him? I mean, yes, he is the great man in Egypt, but in the context of his family, maybe I'm still Joseph, the young man back there who...
You know, we talk sort of tongue-in-cheek or jokingly about how we become children again when we walk through the door of our parents' house. Many people notice a difference in how they are when they suddenly re-enter the childhood home. But in a way, imagine seeing Judah in the flesh and blood, being physically present. And the last time that you saw him was when?
When
you have been thrown into a pit and abandoned. And that, I mean, our bodies remember things like that beyond anything rational. Like Joseph could say, I'm now, you know, very powerful. I have choice in this matter, all of that. But in a way, our bodies carry those stories for a long time.
Yes. And even if he's that powerful man in Egypt, he can fall into that moment of that traumatic experience and relive that, mm-hmm. and then come to realize that this might not be always and also in favor of him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you read the rest of the stories, and we'll do some of that next week, when you read the rest of these stories, those dark moments were almost impossible to forget for all people involved.
Yeah.
It was really difficult.
Yes. At the very end, I remember.
Yes.
We will continue next week our discussion. So I am thankful for your contribution here, Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson. And also thank you to our program engineer, Lindsay Gisbert, and to all of you who are listening in today. For The Good Word, I am Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.